are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Brian Peacock here with you for this Tuesday edition of the show. We've got a mailbag coming up here. If you want to get involved in any of these mailbags, always hit me up at BDPeacock on Twitter or email lockedon49ers@gmail.com. Rate, review the show. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Google Play. We are everywhere. And don't forget to check out all the new articles going up, covering every angle of the draft at lockedon49ers.com. Chris Wilson doing breakdown on each player the 49ers selected. And of course, my 49ers 2018 shadow draft is up there at lockedon49ers.com. I'm going to talk about some of that today, along with taking questions and talking about some of the stuff we saw this weekend through the draft and some of my favorite drafts from other teams around the NFL. We're going to keep the mailbag rolling on to Wednesday too, so keep those questions coming for Nick and I on the Winky Wednesday show. So where to begin? Let's hit the mailbag at the end of the show. Let's start with those shadow 49ers. It's something I like to do every year, and a lot of people like following along, get a lot of feedback with that. I did get one review, I believe it was on iTunes somewhere, that someone got annoyed by the shadow 49ers talk. So I apologize to that one person. There's also three people that really hate us talking about pizza. So for you guys, maybe this first segment, fast forward a couple minutes. But shadow 49ers, so I want to break down what I would be doing at the draft if I was in charge and had John Lynch's ear for this thing. And look, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan had a very good year number one in the draft. I think really overall, the fans are a little bit more weary of the second draft from those guys, and the 2018 draft not getting as high a praise as last year's. And of course, my draft is always a lot different, although I did have two direct hits, two picks that the 49ers selected the same guy I had taken for them at that spot, which is somewhat surprising for how far we were off on some of these picks. It's like a train traveling in opposite directions. You're really far apart, and then at some point you cross, and we crossed paths a couple times there in this draft. But let's start at the top, pick number one. And really, a lot of people were surprised that some of those late rumors in the last 24 hours before the draft, Mike McGlinchey was actually the pick for the 49ers in the first round, number 9 overall. I talked about that for the last couple episodes. You can go back and find how I felt about it. Go to lockedon49ers.com and read my blurb about the pick for the 49ers. The shadow pick for me, and one thing I'm doing this year with the shadow 49ers is I have 5 years, now 6 years of shadow 49ers, and I've got basically an entire depth chart. And the link is in that article to the spreadsheet where I have the shadow 49ers depth chart. I also have the Pro Football Reference AV, which is approximate value grades for the players that have been drafted since then. And my shadow 49ers since 2013 leads the current real 49ers 317 to 273. So I've got about 50 to 60 more approximate value points according to Pro Football Reference throughout the career of all those players drafted since 2013. So round number one, Mike McGlinchey, number 9 overall to the 49ers, of course. My pick for the 49ers roster was Harold Landry, and he did have a bit of a fall. So the valuation there was far apart from where I had Harold Landry, and you know, maybe the Titans was the only team that really liked him as much as I did because they traded up for him in the second round, where the 49ers traded up a little bit after that to take Dante Pettis. Now, with the 49ers shadow roster, I have a big hole at free safety, so that pick was easy because Minkah Fitzpatrick was the top player on my board at the time the 49ers selected at number 9, and he was a huge need pick for the shadow 49ers roster. I've got Jamal Adams at strong safety. I've got Xavier Rhodes at cornerback. I've got, which was, what, the 2013 draft, and then 2015, I believe, was Ronald Darby, so he's the cornerback on the other side. I've got a lot of good pass rushers and defensive linemen. I've got a great linebacking core, so really the last spot of that defense where I needed a true starter was free safety, and that need met value perfectly. Such an easy pick there for that roster would have been Minkah Fitzpatrick. But for the 49ers, I still think they need that speed rusher off the edge, and Harold Landry was my selection at number 9. Second round, Dante Pettis to the 49ers wide receiver. I had them taking Isaiah Oliver after that trade up to number 44 overall. I just thought that the need met the value there for the 49ers. Thought that would have been an easy selection, and you could plug him in. He could be a starter right away if starting in camp, if Richard Sherman wasn't ready to go, and then, you know, he would obviously be a value future starter as well. Connor Williams was my selection for an alternate pick. I'd kind of been avoiding offensive linemen a lot in those shadow drafts recently because that wasn't so much of a need, while I was taking, you know, wide receivers and corners and linebackers, as I mentioned before. So those positions were kind of stacked on the shadow roster in need of some talent on the offensive line. Connor Williams, I thought, was a fantastic value where he fell to number 50 overall for the Dallas Cowboys. And by the way, Connor Williams, 4 pressures allowed in 2016. He was a little bit injured in 2017. I think that led to his fall because he was much better in 2016. He was looking like a top 10 pick. He might have been the pick over McGlinchey if he would have been coming out after his 2016 season. Mike McGlinchey, for example, in 2017 at left tackle for Notre Dame, allowed 16 pressures, which was not terrible, but not good either. So McGlinchey, better run blocker than pass blocker right now. McGlinchey had 4 times as many pressures allowed, quarterback pressures allowed in 2017 as Connor Williams did at left tackle at Texas in 2016. Let's move on to round 3. Fred Warner. This was the first direct hit. He's someone I've talked about a lot on the podcast. If you go back to the John Ledyard episode, Ledyard loved him. We talked a lot about the fit, and we thought he was a perfect fit, a weak side linebacker for the 49ers. As we heard Kyle Shanahan say yesterday, he could be a fit at middle linebacker, that those two, Will linebacker and Mike linebacker, are pretty much interchangeable. So maybe if he's the smarter of the two and the better communicator, maybe he wears the headset, plays middle linebacker, and looking towards the future, if Reuben Foster's around, he sticks it at weak side linebacker instead. But those two, fantastic pairing, super athletic. I love the Fred Warner pick. Definitely fits a need for the 49ers going forward at linebacker. And my alternate pick for that shadow roster, again, looking at the offensive line, with the Humboldt State guy, Alex Kappa. Moving on to that last pick in the 3rd round, number 95 overall, Tarvarius Moore to the 49ers. High upside play. And once they made that pick and then you thought about, okay, they went wide receiver. Now that makes sense because they're looking ahead. My pick of Isaiah Oliver, that guy's ready to go and ready to compete now for a starting job. What the 49ers think here with Tarvarius Moore, they're going for the high upside project player that they're trying to turn into a cornerback and use those physical tools. Might be a year or two away, and then that's when he sort of transitions after Richard Sherman's done, and he's a depth piece for now. So it starts to make sense, and I see that angle, and that does make a lot of sense if they do hit on Moore, and he has some time to develop because he doesn't need to start at either corner or safety right away for the 49ers, but could be a dynamic player with that athletic ability, whereas Fred Warner, Dante Pettis can be used a lot more in 2018, more immediate needs. And then, of course, Mike McGlinchey was sort of a manufactured need they didn't have, but they wanted to upgrade, and so they kind of forced that need to become a need by trading away Trent Brown and hopefully upgrading the right tackle spot, at least as a run blocker. Jury's out on if he's going to be as good of a pass blocker, at least as a rookie. Probably not likely, because that was Trent Brown's strength. And obviously, when it comes to cornerback, maybe Richard Sherman's not ready. You're forced to play more when he's not ready either. But you have Jimmy Ward, who's that safety net now at corner. Moving him to cornerback full-time helps that. And he could, you know, he can play on the outside. He could play in the slot. He could also back up safety if need be. So Jimmy Ward, you know, that playing on that fifth-year option, he's in the last year of his deal. But I think why they wouldn't trade Ward away is because he is a valuable piece, because he might be a glue guy that helps everything, you know, fill in for injuries, maybe start in place of some people that are hurt and not ready to go. So a valuable piece still in Jimmy Ward, and still a really good football player, I think. And if he gets left alone at one spot, he could really even flourish more than he has at any one of those positions. So my shadow pick there for the 3rd round for the 49ers was Equanimeous St. Brown. And he's a player I've liked a lot for San Francisco because they've been, you know, they've needed some length at wide receiver. And he's got, again, he's sort of the wide receiver version of what Tarvarius Moore is. Long, tall, great athlete, and still a raw football player. Although, man, again, this is sort of like how Connor Williams and how Harold Landry had really good 2016s, fell off a little bit in 2017. If they came out a year earlier, I think their stock would have been a lot higher. Equanimeous St. Brown had 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns in 2016 when his quarterback was DeShone Kizer. And, man, they struggled on offense under Wimbush, who was the Notre Dame quarterback in 2017, and Equanimeous's stats were cut not nearly in half with the new quarterback. And all the talent in the world, he's so fluid for how tall he is. He's nearly 6'5", 210 pounds, I think. And 205, 215, I can't remember where he weighed. 214 maybe is what he weighed in at the combine. But, you know, slim guy, long linear build. He's raw. I would like to see him improve on his ability with the ball in the air, using that length at the catch point, going up and catching the ball over guys. And then, you know, just working on routes. And you're a tall guy. It's, you know, quicks are never going to be the number one strength, although he's pretty fluid, especially on like dig routes and crossers. And he can catch and run. Really like the potential for Equanimeous St. Brown, and he might have gone to the best spot for him, even though he fell all the way. He fell all the way to the sixth round, the early sixth, which blows me away with his raw talent, to the Packers. So you talk about the downgrade from going from DeShone Kizer to Wimbush at Notre Dame. Now the upgrade going back to the guy who's starting over DeShone Kizer, who's now with the Packers, also in Aaron Rodgers. And he'll have a chance to flourish there with the Packers. So maybe the best thing for Equanimeous St. Brown, have a little chip on his shoulder, fall a little bit, and develop under the best quarterback right now in the NFL. Alternate pick for me here with the 49ers, or the Shadow 49ers, using that Shadow 49ers depth chart, would have been Kyle LaLeta here. And I didn't like the New York Giants draft. I think their new GM, Dave Gettleman, is kind of a clown when you hear him talk. And he's just really arrogant, and he thinks he's got it figured out. But, man, I just haven't liked what they've done. But Kyle LaLeta, who a lot of people have compared to Jimmy Garoppolo, small school guy, you know, looked good at the Senior Bowl, put up a ton of stats, ton of production, very accurate passer. So a lot of things to like about Kyle LaLeta, and I think he's got potential to be a starter in the NFL. But taking him late third, and where the New York Giants got him at the top of the fourth round, makes a lot of sense. And if they do hit on Kyle LaLeta, that will really do a lot to help this draft class for the New York Giants, who took him because they went running back, which, if you listen to the show, you know I thought that was insanity to take a running back number two overall, passing on Sam Darnold or Rosen or anybody they could have taken there at quarterback. If they hit on that, on that sleeper quarterback in Kyle LaLeta, then all of that's forgiven, and then it doesn't matter anymore just because you got him out of order. But it's a gamble, and so LaLeta, will see him compete with Davis Webb to be the backup to Eli Manning for now, and maybe potentially a long-term starter. So I do like that pick for New York. They might have saved their draft if they do hit on Kyle LaLeta there, but still a long shot. Yeah, I mean, you know, these mid-late round quarterbacks, sometimes they hit, but a lot of times they don't, you know, and even if you just get a long-term backup there, it's still worth it. But New York Giants, man, Dave Gettleman, definitely I think he's driving the clown car over there. Not a fan of Dave Gettleman. Moving on to day three, and my least favorite for the pick for the 49ers in this draft was Kentavious Street. If you listen to yesterday's show, or you go to LockedOn49ers.com and read the article about the shadow drafts, you'll see how I feel about Street. He's a power rusher. I think he's exactly what the 49ers did not need at the defensive end position, and he tore his ACL in April, so he'll be gone for the whole season, and I didn't think he was really that great to start with, to spend a fourth-round pick on here. And the guy that I think was worth spending a fourth-round pick, if you're the gambling type on an injury, Maurice Hurst was my shadow 49ers pick, and I didn't do any alternate picks for day three. Maurice Hurst was a first-round talent. If you don't know his story, a stud interior defensive lineman, and look, this is not a need pick, but he's, you know, Aaron Donald light. That's the style of player he is. Undersized, interior, under tackle, you know, three technique, pass rusher. But I believe he was a first round talent. Had a heart condition that they found at the combine that worried some teams. They didn't let him work out at the combine. He went and got it rechecked out and then got cleared, but teams were still scared away. And he did end up getting drafted by the Raiders, which might have been the only good pick by the Raiders on. Really, throughout the draft, they took him, I believe, maybe fourth or fifth round, I'm not sure, but Maurice Hurst did get drafted. There was talk that maybe he wouldn't even get drafted at all because of that issue, but at least the Raiders weren't completely scared off, and they might have gotten a steal that might have saved their draft, because the Raiders, definitely one of the top three worst drafts, maybe the worst draft in 2018, in my opinion, from any team in the NFL. Moving on to round five, DJ Reed, slot cornerback, drafted by the 49ers. I like this player. Round five, solid pick. He's going to be a special teamer, can return a little bit, probably be a coverage guy, and he will back up the slot cornerback position. I think he definitely has a good chance to make the team. My shadow pick, though, was simple here. Okunrokwo from Oklahoma, strong side linebacker. He ended up getting drafted by the Rams as a 3-4 outside linebacker. I think it's a perfect fit for either that scheme or the 49ers scheme is a strong side linebacker. He can stand up and rush. He can set the edge. He can. He's just a good player and, you know, a little bit undersized maybe for what a lot of teams like in their premier edge rushers. But he's just he's a baller, productive. Really like Oboe and no business him lasting to the fifth round. Round six, Marcel Harris, safety for Florida. Another injury project coming off a torn Achilles. They're hoping he's ready for camp. Strong safety type. He's going to be a special teamer. He's got an uphill battle. There's a lot of DBs now in-house for the 49ers to make the roster. Quentin Meeks, another defensive back who I took here. I'm just picking up change here. I'm just picking up these guys that are falling in the draft for reasons unknown to me. Quentin Meeks, I understand if he fell out of round three or something like that, but to be, and he went undrafted, and so there's something else going on there. I don't see it, because even if you think he's not quite athletic enough to play corner, he could be a safety in the NFL. So Quentin Meeks is my pick here in the sixth round, and I'm interested to hear why some of these guys fall. Oboe and Quentin Meeks doesn't make any sense to me. I get the next pick for the Shadow 49ers, why he fell. Let's move on to the seventh round. The first pick in the seventh round, the 49ers selected Julian Taylor. And a player I kind of like the more I watch him from Temple. But again, another, you know, maybe under tackle or big end player. The 49ers are just collecting these style of larger pass rushers, interior players that are bigger bodied ends. I don't know why that is the direction they went in this draft so hard. That's one of the mysteries and one of the reasons why I wouldn't grade this draft an A for the 49ers. And Julian Taylor, I like the player, and it would make sense here if they did go, you know, Harold Landry or something earlier, or more, you know, Oboe, or any of these guys that were more athletic edge rushers, then just taking some value in the seventh round makes a ton of sense, and it's still okay if you get a good player. But yeah, the direction they went here is a little surprising. And my pick, Hercules Mata'afa, Washington State defensive lineman. He played a super undersized defensive tackle, just shot gaps all day. His burst off the line was insane. He was crazy productive. The interior offensive lineman in the Pac-12 had no shot. He was in the backfield instantly on so many plays. He has that first step burst, but undersized, short-armed, 6'2", 250. He's not your ideal body for an edge player, which he's going to have to move out and play some defensive end in the NFL just because of his size. And I don't think he ran very well, 4.7s or 4.8s. So that's why he fell. So I get why he fell, but the production's there. The motor is there. That first step quickness, so he can get an advantage on every play. You can move him around along the defensive line, I think. I don't think he's going to play any linebacker stuff, which for his size, I think what a lot of teams would want from him is to be able to be a stand-up guy. And he looked like he could stand up and rush, but he would do that from like a middle linebacker position. It was really weird. Everything was interior for him, and he didn't play on the edge at Washington State. So it's a projection, and I get why he fell even more so than Oboe and Quentin Meeks and even Equanimeous St. Brown. But at the same time, he should have been off the board before the seventh round. That still doesn't make sense for how productive and what kind of a motor he has and that first step quickness. He's a useful player, and I think he's going to make his way in the NFL and make a team for sure on Sundays, and maybe prove some teams wrong. And maybe, you know, again, the chip on the shoulder for a lot of these guys might help them in their career after all is said and done. And that moves us to our last pick, and it is another direct hit. Richie James, Middle Tennessee wide receiver. I've talked about him here on the podcast before. I've had him mocked to the 49ers in the seventh round since January, and I tweeted out before day three started how I thought he would be that guy that is a Kyle Shanahan type. He was, definitely fits the Kyle Shanahan mold at wide receiver. Undersized, 5'10", 183 pounds, but super quick. He can separate. He can run with the ball in his hands. Dynamic playmaker for Middle Tennessee. A player I really liked, and I'm not surprised at all that Kyle Shanahan loved him. I definitely like Richie James to make the roster. Man, I just love how he plays big. He's small, but he plays big. He goes up and gets the ball, even though he's, you know, out-muscled or outsized by the defensive backs he's going up against. I really like Richie James all around tool set and his skill set and the way he plays the game. He's a fun player to watch, a playmaker, and I'm looking forward to him competing. And really, when you consider even adding two wide receivers on draft day, there's only four players, I think, at wide receiver that were locks anyways. So if the 49ers keep six, both Dante Pettis and Richie James, plenty of room for them on the roster to go with Pierre Garçon, Trent Taylor, Marquise Goodwin, and Kendrick Bourne. So there's your six wide receivers. I think that would be a shock, really, to me, if it's any other players than those six that that break camp with the 49ers unless there are some injuries. All right, that's the 2018 Shadow 49ers class. Let me know what you guys think. Hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock, email LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And that's the same place to get those mailbag questions in. And now it's time, that Tuesday post-draft mailbag. I want to start with Ferocious Gentleman, who, you know, flattery will get you everywhere. He said, the live stream from Yancey's was fire. You, Eric Crocker, Dylan DeSimone, Nick Winkler, got to do it again. Thank you very much, Ferocious Gentleman. That was a heck of a lot of fun. Definitely want to thank everybody who did come out and hang out live or watched the Facebook Live broadcast from day one and two of the draft. Why did Richie fall to the seventh? All his tape looks phenomenal. Character issues, injuries, level of competition in the Conference USA. Keep up the great work with the podcast. Hashtag North Miami Niner. We got some Miami Niners out there. I like it. I think all those things you mentioned are reasons that Richie James fell to the seventh round. Yeah, size is the number one thing. He's only 183 pounds, 5'10". Even though he plays bigger than his size, I agree, the tape is phenomenal. First time I watched him, I was like, oh, I love this guy. No character issues that I've heard of. There were some injuries in 2017. So he had, I think, 1,300 yards both his sophomore and junior seasons. And then last year was hurt a little bit. So a down 2017 and the size are the reasons. And, you know, Conference USA is always tougher for the smaller school guys to show out versus the other players. So with that size and having a down year in 2017 are probably the only reasons that kept Richie in round seven. Jaime asks, do you think it being a shallow offensive tackle class, it put a premium on McGlinchey? Red Oakland wanted him and traded back after the Niners took him. Yeah, it sounds a lot like, especially since they did take a bad offensive tackle in Colton Miller, the Raiders did after they traded back, that McGlinchey was the guy for them at number 10. And I think the 49ers knew that and they wanted McGlinchey, so that's why they didn't want to trade down. And yes, a shallow offensive tackle class had probably a lot to do with it, with putting the premium on McGlinchey and not wanting to move down to risk losing him. And so it's up to you whether or not you think he was that top 10 offensive tackle. Let's go to CeeLo. Why the F do we need so many big ends? I would love that question, and I love the way that was phrased, and I wish you were in the press conferences to ask John Lynch that question. They were kind of asked that, not worded exactly that way, and their response was, who are they going to replace? Who are the players we drafting going to be better than as far as the pass rushers go? So that means they love Cassius Marsh. They just picked up, by the way, I didn't mention that, they picked up the fifth-year option for Eric Armstead, so he's got two more years now in Scarlet and Gold, and it's only guaranteed for 2019 for injury, so they could still cut him if he plays all year and is healthy. They could cut him before it becomes fully guaranteed next March, but with how injured he has been in his career, it's no guarantee that he will be not hurt, and so maybe that 2019 guarantee does become guaranteed for injury. But Eric Armstead, they like him enough to keep him around, and so there's another big end. I was thinking, okay, Eric Armstead's around for 1 year, Kentavious Street's out for a year with the ACL, then those kind of swap roster positions after this year. But Eric Armstead looks like he might be around for a while as well. And it's a lot to pay. $9 million for the production he's given so far. He's going to have to prove he's worth that money and stay healthy and have a big year for the 49ers in 2018. Still potential to trade Eric Armstead, I think. So I don't think that changes anything from potential of him being traded. The fact that he wasn't traded on draft day, I think, says a lot, though, that he will be around for this year and maybe for two more years and maybe for even beyond that. And yeah, so basically they said, yeah, Cassius Marsh, Jeremiah Tauschew, they thought that those players weren't going to be upgraded by players in the draft. I disagree, but that's their stance. They really like those guys right now for the 49ers at that weak side defensive end spot and situational pass rushers. Let's go to Devin. Hey, Brian, do you think Pettis is going to be a feature in the offense this year? I would say feature is going a little bit too far. He's got to fight for playing time right now. He walks in at wide receiver 4 at best. I think he's behind Kendrick Bourne. I mean, when you walk in day one, you're behind all the veterans. I think he can pass up Kendrick Bourne. I think he's just a better athlete than Kendrick Bourne is. They're similar sized. And then when it comes to the other three spots, it depends what position there's going to be injuries. There's going to be an opportunity for him to come in and potentially start. If you count all three wide receiver positions as starters, and you probably should, Pettis is going to start some games if he stays healthy and some of the other guys don't, and he proves he's worth it, but he could back up all three positions. I think we're going to see him work more at the slot, and you can have multiple slot receivers on the field at the same time. So there might be just packages where Pettis is in there and he's lined up next to Trent Taylor. You know, they go three wide on one side, and so you have two slot receivers there. You can move guys all around. Kyle Shanahan has a lot of pieces to work with, and the fact that he traded up and liked Pettis that much tells me he's got a plan for Pettis. And so I don't know if we're going to see him featured maybe in certain packages, but if there's any kind of injury or he just starts blowing up when he shows up on the field and they can't keep him off the field, maybe he takes a starting job away from one of those guys. Let's go to Mike on Twitter. What was the most risky pick for the Niners? Do you see a pattern of relatively safe picks after 2 years of Shanahan and Lynch? Last year was a lot safer, I think. This year was much less safe. I mean, an offensive tackle is a pretty safe pick early. I think Fred Warner is a fairly safe pick, in my opinion, but they really went with some unsafe picks. So I think this year was a flip-flop in that regard. They took Tarvarius Moore, which is a projection. They took Kentavious Street, who's coming off a torn ACL. They took Marcel Harris, coming off an Achilles injury. So for those reasons, I think there's... And trading up for a wide receiver, who a lot of people didn't have ranked that high. This was definitely a much riskier draft than I think year one was. And I think they are okay with roster as it stands to take some of those chances. So I think that's... I think overall what Shanahan and John Lynch are saying about their roster is that we really like roster as constructed, so we're going to try for some home run picks here and see what we have and develop some talent for not so much 2018, but 2019 and beyond. All right, we got a lot of them here. Definitely not going to get to all of these, but again, we've got Winky Wednesday coming up, and we will definitely hit that mailbag hard. I want to stay on Twitter with Cronessi. What are your views on Arizona and the Hawks in the draft? Do they feel enough holes to be competitive? Also, is it just me, or does Gruden's show in Oakland look like a potential dumpster fire? Yeah, I agree. The Raiders might have had the worst draft out of everybody, and I'm not sure what they're doing. Then they fired their whole scouting staff. Not the whole scouting staff, but I think most of them, and Gruden's trying to bring in his own guys. Just a lot of kind of a strong-arm influence from John Gruden there, and he's been out of the league. I mean, he's been covering the game, but he hasn't been coaching, and a lot has changed in a decade since he's been on the sideline, and too much control can be a scary thing there. So if he's the head coach and GM and he wants only his guys in there and he has that much influence in the draft room, I could see that absolutely going very south very quickly for Gruden and the Oakland Raiders, especially after seeing what they did in this draft. But if this draft was done by the old scouting staff, then yeah, I guess you should fire him because I thought it was terrible. I thought it was a terrible draft for the Raiders. They got to, you know, he's going to have to coach this team well, and they've got to turn around that scouting department and bring in some more talent. Luckily for Gruden and the Raiders, they got their quarterback in place. They do have some talented pieces on defense. They have some stud players to build around on that team. So I don't think they're definitely going to go in the tank or anything like that. Arizona and the Seahawks. The Cardinals, I really like what the Cardinals did, because for them sitting at number 15 overall to be able to move up and get a quarterback like Josh Rosen after quarterbacks that were worse than him went before number 10, and they didn't have to give up a future first-round pick or anything like that. I thought that was a great move for Arizona, and the quarterbacks in the NFC West is going to be the story. I mean, the NFC West is going to be competitive for a long time if Josh Rosen hits to go with Goff and Garoppolo and Russell Wilson. This is going to be a good division, and I think the Cardinals' roster isn't that bad, so plugging in a good quarterback, and he might be the most ready to play right away. I think him and Baker Mayfield are the guys who are ready to start as rookies. Man, Josh Rosen could be just a fantastic fit for them, and I think it was a really great pick and a nice move for Arizona to be able to move up and get a franchise quarterback potentially and not have to sell the farm to do so. The rest of their draft was okay. Christian Kirk, I think, you know, he was worthy of maybe a second rounder. I thought he's maybe more of a third rounder. I liked when he showed up at Texas A&M as a freshman, and I thought he was going to be a stud, and then kind of just didn't take the next step, but a good player, more of a slot receiver there. And Mason Cole, solid pick in the third round, interior offensive lineman from Michigan. So, you know, I think they did all right with what they had, and to be able to move up and only give up, you know, like I think it was a third and a fifth rounder or whatever it was to get up and get their quarterback, I would give high marks to Arizona for what they did just with that pick of quarterback and Josh Rosen in the first round. Looking at the Rams, staying in the NFC West here, I'll get to the Seahawks in a second. The Rams, they had one really good pick. They had a couple of really good picks, actually, but not early in the draft. They took Ogbonnaya Okoronkwo, Oboe, a shadow 49er. I think he's an awesome fit for Wade Phillips' defense as a 3-4 outside linebacker. And I really like John Kelly, running back from Tennessee, who they stole in the sixth round. Joe Noteboom they took in the third. They didn't have first or second round picks because they had traded those away. They got their first rounder they traded to New England, so they got Brandon Cooks. So, you know, you can count Brandon Cooks as part of their class, which makes it look a lot better. Brandon Allen, I like the center from Michigan State. He was in the fourth round, so, you know, I guess that's okay value. So I think the Rams did all right when you consider Brandon Cooks as part of that draft class, but Oboe is my favorite pick for them in round five. But really, with the Rams, it's all about McVay and Goff and how that develops going forward. Going to be some stiff competition in the NFC West, that's for sure. And Seattle had an awful draft. Their best pick was, again, a fifth rounder, a linebacker, Shaquem Griffin. And, you know, just because it tugs at the heartstrings a little bit and the story that Shaquem Griffin is, and I think the value was there for him in the fifth round. Some people were talking about him after he ran that 4-3 going in like the second round. I didn't think that was quite right, but taking him in the fifth is absolutely some value. And he's going to be a sub-package linebacker, I think, for them. It's a good fit. And Shaquem Griffin, he's going to be a good player, and he's going to make an impact on special teams for sure as a rookie. But Rashad Penny, the guy they took in the first round, and they said they would have taken him at 18 overall before they traded down to number 27. That's a questionable pick. And he can't pass block, so it looks like a two-down running back that they drafted at number 27 overall. Thought he was maybe a third-round player, Rashad Penny. So questionable draft there for... They had a couple okay picks later. Trey Flowers, safety from Oklahoma State, is all right. Jamarco Jones, I thought was a good value pick late in the fifth round. An offensive lineman out of Ohio State. But their offensive line is a mess, and I don't think a fifth-rounder is going to really help that all that much. So we'll see. If Russell Wilson stays upright, though, they've always got a chance, and they're well-coached defense, and they did not trade away Earl Thomas, and they still have, you know, some very good linebackers, and they still have pretty good but rebuilding defensive line, so you can't count the Seahawks out. And if all that talent on the Arizona Cardinals starts to play a little bit better now that they got a quarterback in-house and he looks good and competitive as a rookie, it's going to be a competitive NFC West, and I really wouldn't even know how to shuffle that. I think, you know, you got to put the Rams on top. I think the 49ers are going to be competing in there, but you can't say that any of these teams are just going to lay down and be awful. I think all these teams are going to be competitive in 2018. Okay, let's squeeze in one more question here. Thanks to everybody who got involved in the mailbag today. We're going to keep going with a lot of these questions on tomorrow's Winky Wednesday episode as well. To Sydney Niner, which draftees don't make the 53-man roster and why? Thank you for the question, Sydney. Let's see. Who does not make the roster? Well, Kentavious Street is my least favorite pick, but he definitely is going to be on IR for the year, so he's going to be around for sure. I would say Marcel Harris, just because he is such a late-round pick in the sixth round, if he's not fully back from his Achilles injury, although he could be an IR stash too. So all the first and second day picks are going to make the roster. DJ Reed, I think, has a tough shot just because there's all, suddenly a lot of cornerbacks, but he could be the number two nickel corner, you know, potentially. So that means DJ Reed would definitely make the roster, in my opinion. Then you're looking at Julian Taylor and Richie James. Richie James, I think, is a lock because I love him. So Julian Taylor, the first of the seventh round picks, just because there's so many players with his build, so many of the big end types on this roster already. I think it's an uphill battle for Julian Taylor, the defensive lineman from Temple, to make the roster more so than any of these other draftees, just because of how stacked the defensive line is, and there's too many similar big end, sort of undersized interior defensive lineman types already on the 49ers roster. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for joining in on the mailbag. We're going to keep it going on the Winky Wednesday show tomorrow, and I will talk to you guys then right here on Locked On 49ers.